Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me, as ever, from North America, my colleague from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Rimbo. Jeff, what a week! What a fantastic week of NFL action, week 10.
You know, I think it just gets better and it gets more dramatic and there's more to talk about each week, so let's go.
Oh, incredible stuff. I mean, we had teams winning through missed field goals. There were two-point conversions late on. There were controversial penalties. There were, any way you think you want to slice it and dice it and see how a team won. We had deflected passes that were caught in the end zone. Incredible, incredible week of NFL and not good for our picks, though, Jeff. I went 4-10. You went 6-8. But, I mean, we'll take that if we get that kind of entertainment.
I tell you what, I was watching and I just was like, I'm getting killed this week. But I mean, who would have thought? It's been like, I think maybe before you were even born, you know, that Detroit has gone into Green Bay and beaten the Packers. And what is going on with the Packers? You talk about a team that started to spiral. Wow.
Yeah. No, I wish that was the case, but I was 19 and just setting out on the world of NFL journalism. It was the first year I covered the NFL professionally, and it was a time when I still had hair, Jeff. That's how long ago it was when the Lions last won at Lambeau Field. We'll get to a couple of bits of news, then we'll dissect some of these games, these incredible games around the NFL, as Jeff mentioned, Detroit winning in Green Bay for the first time since 1991. Miami winning in Philadelphia the first time since 1993. Jacksonville won in Baltimore for the first time since 1999. We had it all going on this weekend.
But you're in 1991, 1993, talking about you. Did you have like a Sid Vicious with the spiked up kind of thing, or were you Joe Strummer? You had the Joe Strummer look, or what were you rocking back in those days?
Well, unfortunately, Jeff, I was starting to lose my hair at that stage, so it was kind of just brushed forward and hope for the best. I was going for the comb over at 19 years of age. Shocking.
You had the Chewbacca look working, huh?
Yeah, so that's why it always makes me laugh when people sort of hit me on Twitter and say, oh, you haven't got any hair. It's like, I've been hearing that for years. You've got to come with something better than that. Come on.
Just tell them you got better things to do with your hormones than grow hair.
Exactly. Well, there's too much brains in there. It's poking out. Their head's poking all the hair out of the way. Peyton Manning has a foot injury. What's the pronunciation of this? What is it?
Plantar fasciitis.
But it's pretty... They're talking, Jeff, that he might only be out for this game coming up this weekend against the Chicago Bears. But I remember this is an injury that Antonio Gates had for San Diego, and it's I thought he was out a lot longer with this. I thought this was a significant injury.
I'm going to tell you something. I had that last year I played. I had plantar fasciitis, and it is one of the most painful injuries. You know, I had, like, I think 11 surgeries when I played, but that was the most painful injury I had. And because it's an inflamed tendon in the bottom of your foot, and there's nothing, every time you walk or put any pressure at all on your foot, it's like somebody's sticking a knife right in the bottom of your foot. So that's an injury that's the only thing that helps it is you got to get off of it and you got to rest it. Now, they're probably, I would imagine, shooting with cortisone and try and get the swelling to go out as fast as they can, but he needs rest. That's the most important thing, and I think that the Broncos are doing the right thing. You can see, last night, I watched the interviews with him, you can see the pain in his eyes because such a great competitor, and after the performance against Kansas City, the thing he wants more than anything else is to get back on the field and, you know, show that he can still play. But he's got to get healthy first. His skills have diminished to the point now where, you know, he has to be 100% to be able to be, play at a level that the Broncos are going to need, frankly, if they're going to make a run.
Yeah, it was a 29-13 loss at home to the Kansas City Chiefs. Manning went 5 of 20, 35 yards, no touchdowns, 4 interceptions, a passer rating of 0.0, all on a day when he broke the great Brett Favre's all-time passing record for passing yards. So it was a difficult day for Peyton. And this is a difficult situation for the Broncos, Jeff, because you don't bench Hall of Famers. But maybe this injury allows them to turn to Brock Osweiler this week, because I said this on Sky's coverage on Sunday night. You take the number 18 off the back of Manning's jersey and you take the Manning name off, and then we sit and watch him play this season, you're looking at one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. So it's a difficult time for the Broncos. Maybe this is a convenient injury for them.
Well, you know, the reality of it is, on the same day that that little four-yard route to Hillman, you know, made him the leading passing yardage guy in the history of the National Football League, he also had a day with four interceptions that ranked him in the top 20 worst performances by a quarterback since they started to keep the quarterback rating system. So, you know, if you're exactly right. You know, if you just put him in a generic uniform and didn't know who he was, you would say, why in the world are those people playing that guy? So, you know, I think it's one of those tough deals, and time waits for no one, you know, and when Father Time calls, it's a lot of times it's not a gentle knock on the door that he gives you, and I think that's part of the issue. And then you compound that with the fact that he's playing hurt and he's playing in an offense that he's trying to recognize. So it's a really, really tough situation in Denver right now. And I think Osweiler, could he be any worse?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, you with that strong defense, you know, we might look at casting a critical eye over Brock Osweiler, but he's only got to manage a game. I mean, he's got to be that what we talk about, that game manager. Maybe, Jeff, he's got some mobility. He's 6'8", so he's a big guy, but he's got some mobility. Maybe we see him fit those rollouts that Gary Kubiak wants. Maybe this is a way for Kubiak to go back to some of the stuff that he liked.
Well, it's interesting. This is kind of, I thought about this last night while I was driving home. When I was working for Bart Andrus in Amsterdam in NFL Europe, Bart was living in a little town up in northern Montana, and his son was playing high school football, and the quarterback for that team was Brock Osweiler.
Okay.
So we had league meetings, and you would typically go to the home of wherever your head coach's, you know, home was. You'd that's where you'd have your meetings, right? So we're up there, and we went to see Bart's son played basketball, and Brock was on the basketball team. He's 6'8", and he's really, really a good athlete. He can run for a 6'8" guy. He's got good feet. You know, he's got a lot of the things that you look for. And like you say, you got to believe Kubiak maybe will be even a little more comfortable with Osweiler than he was with Peyton, because he can get back to some of the things that he loves to do with, you know, the offense and with the quarterback. Brock Osweiler is a much better athlete than Schwab was, who, you know, he had in Houston, and they, you know, they used to go up and down the field when Schwab was playing well in Houston.
I saw a couple of plays, Jeff, where the ball coming from Peyton Manning just took forever to get there, and he got Emmanuel Sanders hurt on one play. I mean, that's one of the things that maybe we overlook, is that suddenly some of these passes become dangerous for the wide receivers because the timing is off. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders got absolutely nailed at the end of one of those catches that took forever to get there.
Yeah, when that backside safety starts to close and the ball floats, you know, those tenths of a second are the difference between a catch and get down and a catch and get blown up. So, you know, obviously the receivers, they don't like to see that ball hang in the air either, especially when they're going, you know, on those routes in the middle of the field.
So, Jeff, how much of an issue will it be when we look at Peyton Manning if he does return early or he tries to fight through this injury? Because we hear about quarterbacks having to push off on their feet and use their feet a lot, especially a quarterback with declining arm strength.
Well, you're correct on a couple fronts. Number one, his arm strength is declining, and that's just natural. He's 40 years old now. You know, you don't run as well at 40 as you do at 20. You don't throw with the same velocity that you had when you were 20 years old. So to compensate for that, your throwing platform, your feet, and how you stand, and your weight distribution, and the bend in your knees, and all of that are more critical as you get older, as your arm strength starts to decline. Well, now you add the fact that he's got this fasciitis in his his foot, which is an extremely painful injury. It makes it harder for you to push off, to step and really get your feet underneath you as you throw. And Peyton has always been a guy who, you know, he doesn't rely on natural gifts in terms of his ability to throw the football. He's very, very meticulous about his fundamentals and his weight distribution and all of those things. As a matter of fact, he's the kind of quarterback that you want a young quarterback to watch as he's developing. Well, because of that now, if you take away the dimension of the balance and the footwork and all the things that are critical for him, it just puts more stress on that arm, and you know, his ability to deliver the football is diminished.
All right, let's just get a couple of other bits of injury news, and then we will talk about, I want to talk about Rob Ryan being fired in New Orleans, Jeff. I know a friend of yours, and you know that family well. But first of all, Julian Edelman has broken his foot. It looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the regular season for the New England Patriots. Andrew Luck, since we last spoke, actually, Andrew Luck's out 2 to 6 weeks with a lacerated kidney and an abdominal tear. I don't think that's 2 weeks. It's going to be closer to that six-week mark. Sam Bradford's out for 2 games with a separated shoulder and a concussion. Nick Foles is going to be benched for Case Keenum. So they just signed Foles a couple of months ago to a 2-year extension in St. Louis. He's got 7 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 5 fumbles on the season. Didn't complete a pass over 10 yards last week. Just on those, Jeff, there's some big names in there, and we are getting to that business end of the season. Let's start with Edelman and what it means for Tom Brady. He lost Dion Lewis a couple of weeks ago. Then he lost Edelman on Sunday in an epic game against the New York Giants. With Edelman on the field, on third down, Brady and the Patriots went 5 of 6. Without Edelman, they went 2 of 8. And Brady said this week it's not as simple as simply sliding over Danny Amendola because they have different styles.
You know, and they've worked, Brady and Edelman have worked so hard. Edelman, as a young receiver in New England, figured out really fast that his meal ticket was his ability to be that guy, that comfort zone guy, underneath all those underneath routes, all those crossers, all those option routes for Brady. And they worked extremely hard. As a matter of fact, Julian would leave his home in Northern California to go to Southern California, L.A., where Brady was, so that they could throw and develop the chemistry that it takes. That takes thousands and thousands and thousands of throws and hours and hours and hours of being together. So you're not going to get the same, even with Danny Amendola, you're not going to get the same kind of chemistry, you know, now that Julian's out of the mix. Mm. To me, the thing that would, if you're a New England fan, the scary thing is, when does the tipping point come? Now, obviously, you've got a Hall of Fame coach, and you've got an organization that understands and have the culture of winning and all of those things. But you start chipping away at the, you know, just the players that it takes. Look at their offensive line. I mean, it's a patchwork. They're moving guys around, still winning. You know, they lose their running back, Deion Lewis, who had been so dynamic in the passing game, still finding a way to win. Now you take away Julian Edelman, and, you know, this is not a team that's going to wow you with their weapons. Obviously, Gronk is, you know, arguably the best tight end in the league. But, you know, Amendola, Edelman, those are guys that are functional players within the system. They're not big play guys that are going to knock it out of the park for you. So you start chipping away at Tom Brady's weapons, eventually, you know, there's got to be a tipping point for every football team. And so for the Patriots, this is a concern. How much more of a role is LeGarrette Blount going to have to play now? Mm. They're going to have to run the football. Well, you got to have an offensive line to run the football, and this is an offensive line that has played extremely well when you consider all of the changes, Neil, and all of the shuffling, and, you know, this is maybe Belichick's best year of coaching, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tom Marshall actually asks in the mailbag, does the loss of Julian Edelman put the Patriots' hopes of going unbeaten to an end? And I mean, I think I would say the same as you, Jeff. I think it's a cumulative effect. You had Dion Lewis, you had Julian Edelman. You've got Brian Stork and Cameron Fleming are your starting offensive tackles. I mean, it's, at some point, these things might catch up with the Patriots. And Brady took a lot of hits in the game. We can talk about the game in a little while. But these things can all add up and take their toll, can't they, Jeff?
Yeah, the NFL is an unforgiving business. Nobody's going to send you sympathy cards when you lose players. And, you know, everybody's trying to win. It's a battle. It's a business. It's a bottom line business. And, you know, I'm certain that the people who have New England on their schedule ahead, Buffalo and those teams, they're looking at that and saying, here's our chance now. Another piece of the puzzle's missing, and who's going to fill in? Well, you're going to have somebody. Somebody will step in there. But can that somebody even give you half of what Julian Edelman did? Because Julian Edelman, you know, you look at in the National Football League, when it comes down to converting on third down, he is the best receiver in the National Football League. Mm. Now, you take that, that's a huge chunk out of an offense, any offense.
Yeah, definitely. Timing is everything in the NFL. We know that in terms of plays and being in the right place at the right time. The Patriots missed out on Wes Welker by a week. He signed with the Rams. I would imagine they would have been giving Wes a call about now.
Well, you would think that would be a natural because he understands the system. He's, you know, obviously worked with Brady. He's worked with Belichick. He understands the culture inside that locker room, how they do things in New England. And like you say, it's all about timing. And you know, there's so many things in life in the National Football League, life in pro football that you can't control, and you just hope when we say it to our players all the time, the only thing that you're guaranteed in pro football is adversity. And you hope when adversity strikes, number one, you're resilient enough to go through it. And number two, in the case of personnel, that there's somebody out there that you can access that can come in and help your football team. And Welker would have been certainly, I think, a guy that New England would look taking a long, hard look at.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff, I'm in our second room of this recording of the podcast already. We've had some technical issues this morning. Where are you? I like to know where you are when we're recording. You sound like you're in a coffee shop.
I am sitting in a coffee shop. You know me, Neil. I gotta have a dark, strong coffee with a shot of espresso. And then, hey, we're in the second round of the playoffs, baby. I gotta get in there and start cranking away because we got the Eastern Final coming up this Sunday.
All right. Don't believe a word of it, folks. He's sitting there sipping his caramel macchiato, whatever that is.
Oh, Jesus. Hey, you know what they told me? Somebody told me one time that the longer it takes you to order in a coffee shop, the bigger knucklehead you are. So and I won't use the language that the guy really said when he told me, but I thought, and I was standing there the other day, and I thought, hey, you know what? He's right.
It's funny. Sometimes when we're at Super Bowl, and we might walk into a Starbucks. Jeff, what do you want? Just a coffee. It's like, no, we're in Starbucks, Jeff. Look, there's a huge menu there. No, I want a coffee. It's like, I'll have a coffee, and I'll either have it black or white. Simple. Keep it simple, Jeff, right? What about Rob Ryan then? Rob Ryan fired as defensive coordinator. This, I think, was easy for the Saints to do on a couple of levels, and then I'll get your opinion on it. First of all, I thought it was complicated anyway. They had Dennis Allen in that building already, who has a defensive background and has been a head coach. So Dennis Allen is there. This is a defense that was ranked 31st a year ago. They're dead last in the NFL this year. Maybe this is just a chance for Sean Payton to push all that blame to Rob Ryan. What's your take on it, Jeff?
Well, I think there are a number of factors. First of all, I'm going to divorce myself from the emotion of that's a good friend of mine that got fired, right? And recognize that, you know, every year it's a new situation. And one of the challenges that New Orleans is having is the fact that they're so strapped against that salary cap. And they've lost good players and gone out and, in the case of the defense, brought in a guy, Browner, who they anticipated would, you know, really help them in the secondary. And he's been a liability, frankly. I mean, if you saw the play, and I know there's been a lot of discussion about this, there's a screen pass in the Washington game, and instead of going after the ball carrier, he follows through on some personal issue he's got with an offensive lineman instead of chasing the ball.
I mean, selfish play, Jeff.
That kind of play. Yeah, it's selfish play and penalties. Penalties are ultimately, and he's the most penalized corner in the NFL, they're a product of one or two things. Either you're fundamentally sloppy, or two, you're selfish because your thing becomes bigger than the team. So I think that's part of what they're dealing with there. They've got young players all over that defense that aren't, you know, they're all learning on the job. That's a hard way to learn in the National Football League. And, you know, you've got a dynamic in the coaching staff where, you know, here's Rob, has a great first year in New England, second year not as good, then Dennis Allen becomes available, so Sean goes out and brings him in. Now, Dennis Allen is a defensive coordinator by trade, was the head coach of the Raiders. That dynamic is a tough dynamic, right? I mean, that's a tough, tough deal. To the point where Dennis was actually calling the coverages and Rob was calling the fronts and blitzes, I know that's not Rob's deal. I've not talked to him about it directly, but in my heart of hearts, I know Rob very well. I can't see that being something that he would be very comfortable with. So now you got this guy over your shoulder. He's not a guy that you brought in. It just creates a tough situation. And I sent him a text last night and just told him, hey, man, you're hanging there. Go spend some time with your family. You're headed for a better place. It was a tough deal. Tough deal all the way around. I thought it was handled really poorly yesterday because after the game, there was all kind of speculation. And early in the day, they said they fired him. Then they came back and recanted that. And Sean Payton said, no, he's still the defensive coordinator for now.
Yeah.
But he said, we're going to discuss it. Mickey Loomis and I are going to discuss it. We're definitely not going to continue down the same road that we're on. So I'm sure there was some talk in there about, Rob, we need you to do these things or you're out of here. Well, let me tell you something about Rob. Rob knows what he wants and knows how he wants to do it. And, he's not going to just be somebody's, puppet. So I'm sure that was not a particularly, harmonious meeting when it went down.
Well, at some point, Jeff, it would have been enough's enough for Rob Ryan, because as you mentioned, Dennis Allen's taken half of his job away in a way. The numbers don't lie. This is the first team in NFL history to allow a quarterback to throw at least 4 passing touchdowns and no interceptions 3 weeks in a row. So the wheels were coming off on this defense, but Rob Ryan defenders and Rob Ryan himself will say, well, this defense was a top 5 defense in New Orleans, but there's lots of stories out there that he was asked over the past couple of years to pare down the playbook. We know that Rob and Rex have very complex defensive schemes. He was asked to cut that back, wasn't he, Jeff? And that if he was going to have that taken away from him even further, he probably is quite glad to be looking at a fresh start now.
Well, I think so. And, again, the thing people got to understand, here's a guy that's respected in the business. There are schools of thought, right, in football. There are schools of thought offensively and there are schools of thought defensively. And, Rob and Rex and the guys that follow that system, they're going to be complex. The Patriots are complex. Mike Pettine's complex. There are a number of Wade Phillips is complex. There are a number of teams in the league that are that way. Lovie Smith in Tampa, not so much, right? But that's a different school of thought. Now, it would be like Sean Payton, who believes in what he believes in on offense, somebody coming to him and saying, Sean, we need you to take these things out of what you're doing offensively. That's difficult to swallow, right? Because it's not like Rob can't coach. I mean, you look at some of the things he's done and over the course of his career, but it the defense that he runs requires a specific skill set. It requires buy-in by everybody, and it requires everybody understanding their job because it's a high-risk, high-reward defense. The reality of it is, in the last 3 weeks, there's been a lot of risk and not much reward, and in the National Football League, that usually is a ticket out the door.
Yeah. Let's start our look back at week 10 in the NFL. And Jeff, we can go by a couple of games and look at some games specifically, but I want to talk about the never give up attitude that NFL teams have. And I know that's why these players end up in the NFL in the first place. They have incredible mental toughness, and it's the same with the coaches as well on all levels of that game. Once you go higher up, in professional football, I think there's this desire that is there. But a couple of examples which spring to mind. Blake Bortles and the Jags. Okay, they are trailing Baltimore 2019. There's 1 second left on the clock. And Bortles takes the snap and no one else moves. Nobody else moves on the play because they've not had time to call a play. They've had no timeouts left. And Bortles takes the snap. He falls over. He gets up. And because he's playing like his life depends on it, Elvis Dumervil grabs his face mask. They move 15 yards downfield and they kick a winning field goal. Jason Myers, 53 yards. Go to the Giants and the Patriots game. Odell Beckham Jr. catches a touchdown in the end zone. And as he's securing that ball, Malcolm Butler comes in. He doesn't sulk that Odell Beckham's caught a touchdown on him. He reaches in and knocks that ball out, allowing the Patriots to go down and kick a game-winning field goal as well. I mean, just the... Yeah, I mean, going back to the Jags game, the NFL have now come out and said that the Jags should have been called for a full start because they weren't set. So Baltimore will feel very aggrieved to have lost that game. But it just highlighted to me that never-say-die attitude, because there was no good reason for Blake Bortles to even bother with that play. No one else was moving. His team hadn't moved. The receivers didn't move downfield. But because Bortles did something, it created a mistake in that Ravens defense.
Well, I think to me, Neil, it really illustrates the fine line between winning and losing in the National Football League. Mm. And, you know, on one hand, I'm really, really happy for the Jags, because that's what they've been selling as a coaching staff. Gus and that coaching staff have been selling compete every play, fight to the end. That's been their mantra as they built that team. And so when you see it come to fruition and it manifests itself in a win, it's going to be a much easier sell and the belief system will start to build. You know, the Beckham play to me was a young player, two young players, one doing exactly what you want in Malcolm Butler, which is compete to the end of the down, fight to get the ball out, right? Mm-hmm. So, on the other hand, it was a young guy making a great catch and not doing what he's been coached to do, I'm sure, which is pull the ball away from the defender and get it into your body as soon as you can. Mm-hmm. He left the ball out to show the world that he made the catch, and he exposed the ball to the strip. So again, that's the fine line between winning and losing, and that's what drives you crazy as a coach, because here's this phenomenal young receiver, maybe the best receiver in the league right now, certainly best young receiver in the league, and makes a phenomenal catch against a DB who's battled all the way from being a street free agent to making it, you know, making huge plays in the NFL. And he competes, and it's not to say that Beckham didn't compete, but he didn't compete smartly, which is catch the ball, stick it on your body, score the touchdown, win the game. Then you can swag all you want. Then you can do your dance. You can whatever you want to do. But don't do it until you secured the ball. That's a lesson a young guy's got to learn. And the sad part about it is that kind of behavior cost your football team a game, right? And, you know, I saw how frustrated Tom was after the game, and rightly so, because that's a football game they should have won. And, you know, you talk about competitiveness, you know, I think no team right now, you know, no team right now might exemplify competitiveness any better than the Carolina Panthers. And that motto of keep pounding, keep pounding. You know, and Koa, my son, is like, he's like a Panthers historian. He said, Dad, you know where that comes from? I said, no, son, where does it come from? Sam Mills, who used to be a great linebacker in Carolina when they first were formed, and then went on and was the linebacker coach, and we lost Sam tragically to cancer. Mm. When he was diagnosed with cancer, that became his mantra. While he coached through his cancer, his message every day was, I'm just going to keep pounding. I'm just going to keep pounding. And so the Panthers have picked up on that, and it's to the point now where it's actually stitched in the neck of their jerseys. Mm. So as they put their jersey on each day, they see that little message from Sam Mills, keep pounding. I thought, you know, geez, Thomas Davis, you talk about keep pounding. How many ACLs has he been through? Keekly, keep pounding. Olsen, keep pounding. Cam Newton, keep pounding. They're the team that, you know, you look at them, they might have as good a chance as anybody of going undefeated when you look at their schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they kept pounding with a 27-10 win over Tennessee, which was one of the more routine and mundane wins of the weekend, which is why it doesn't get the attention it probably deserves. But, Jeff, I want to go back to that Patriots-Giants game. So the Patriots won 27-26. We talked about Odell Beckham's play, but these Patriots, I mean, you want to talk about resiliency. they make plays. I mean, there was a play where Tom Brady was sacked. He fumbled, and it was Brian Stork who fell on the loose football. It wasn't a member of the Giants. It was incredible to see them step up. Fourth and 10. I mean, the Giants had them. They Beckham catches that touchdown, they probably win. They have a fourth and 10 on New England's next drive, and Amendola catches a 12-yard pass. That's after Landon Collins has dropped an interception. I mean, this was a chance to win the game. And actually, Jeff, you used to coach defensive backs, so I want to ask you this, because we have fans here in the UK who also like soccer and like other sports. And a big thing in soccer is that if you're in a better position to either head the ball or make a play or get the football, you know, the player will call for it. You know, if it's me and you, and I'll shout Neil's ball. Do defensive backs do that, Jeff? Are they coached to do that? Or because we saw last week in the game against the Titans, two Saints defenders going up for the same ball, and it ended up being a touchdown for Delanie Walker and the Titans. I thought Dominic Rogers-Cromartie was in a better position to make that interception last week. Is it something that just doesn't happen in American football?
Well, it's not typical in American football, and I think there are a couple of reasons. Number one, the field is so much smaller.
Right.
Right? There's less space between players, so the vantage point of the players are different. And so because it's so important to drive on the football on defense, that once the ball's in the air, if you're playing great secondary, it's like a pack of sharks going after, you know, a wounded mullet in the ocean. I mean, everybody comes. Well, you know, obviously you want that aggressiveness, but at times you can get into situations like happened, you know, with the Saints. And again, the reality of it is, when it goes bad, it goes real bad usually. Mm. And that's what's happened, you know, happened with the Saints. That play is typical. I know exactly the play you're talking about. It's Mariota, you know, throws a pass late over the middle. It's, you know, bad decision. But he lives to fight another day because two Saints guys bang into each other and the ball falls on the ground. It's what you hope is guys know where the next defender is, and at times will make a decision, pull off a ball because they know that the other guy's got a better chance at it. But it's not as prevalent in American football as it is in English football.
No. What about the resiliency of the Patriots? Did you see that in this game? I mean, this was a game, if ever they were going to lose their perfect record, this looked like it, the way the game was unfolding. And they come out with the win with Gostkowski nailing a 54-yarder with 1 second left.
You know, this is one of the tough things in coaching, because, you know, I'm sure that what, you know, Bill Belichick sells in New England is very similar to what Gus Bradley sells in Jacksonville, you know, and, you know, what Mike Mularkey's selling in Tennessee, you know, about play every play, you know, compete to the final whistle, you know, you got to deal with adversity, all those things, because that's the reality of our business. The challenge is, if you're in Tennessee or you're in Jacksonville, you haven't had enough deposits in that winning bank account
to truly believe it.
So when you haven't been through it so many times, the Patriots have gone to the winning bank so many times and made a deposit, right? That when it gets tough, it's, hey, do you remember? Let's go back and play like, hey, we've been here before. It's not a, they don't panic. They don't feel the pressure in those scenarios. They just keep playing. And what's the motto there, a bit more than anything else? Do your job. And when you get in adverse situations and it's not going well, that's exactly what they go back to. Do your job. Don't worry about the score. Don't worry about the situation. Don't worry about the down and distance. Don't worry about where we're playing. Just do your job. And if you do, good things will continue to happen to us. No guarantee, but we improve our odds. So I think that's one of the challenges that you have when you're trying to turn a program. Mike Pettine isn't selling something unusual in Cleveland. Number one, he doesn't have enough players right now. And number two, those players don't have that firm belief that a kid raised in the New England system like Brian Stork, that's where he's been. That's all he knows. And so he knows that the Patriots, that's the quote, the Patriot way.
I guess Belichick can always say, you know, we won the Super Bowl with Seattle camped at our 1 yard line in the last minute with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. We can beat the Giants when all we need is a field goal. I mean, that's what you're talking about, isn't it, Jeff?
I mean, you go through all of it. Tom Brady's been there through kicking a last minute field goal in Houston to beat Carolina in a Super Bowl. I mean, they know the deal, right? They know the deal. It's a part of their DNA. It's a part of their culture. Other teams are struggling trying to create that, and they may catch lightning in a bottle 1 year, but they can't. They just don't have enough deposited in the winning bank to make it a part of who they are.
Let's have a look at the Detroit Lions' 18-16 win over the Green Bay Packers. This was an incredible one because of all the history that went into it. 24 games in a row they'd lost in Green Bay, but they were up 18-10. Then the Packers score a touchdown, Rodgers to Justin Perillo. Then they go for the two-point conversion, which gets knocked away from Devontae Adams in the end zone. Then, incredibly, Calvin Johnson doesn't secure the onside kick. The Packers have a chance to win it. Mason Crosby, screwball kick, funny-looking kick, misses from 52 yards, so the Lions win. So those kind of things make the headlines, Jeff. But lost amongst all that is the fact that these Packers now have lost three games in a row.
Yeah, you know, I saw there was one of the mailbag questions about, is it time for Aaron Rodgers to tell everybody don't panic?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think here's the reality in Green Bay. You've lost Jordy Nelson. I watch him, and I see teams have kind of found a way with them. They're getting a lot more press coverage outside, and until they can run the football with some consistency, they're going to continue to get that. And that's created a situation where it's difficult for them to separate, right? They don't have that guy right now. And so Rodgers has to be, and Rodgers is one of the most accurate guys in the league, but he has to be even more accurate because of the coverage stuff they're seeing.
We had this question in the mailbag, Jeff. Sorry. We had this question, Jeff, from Jackie Steed. So this kind of goes into all what you're talking about with the offense. So I thought I'd throw it in there now. Jackie Steed.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation. I think he asked about the play calling.
Yeah, yeah. This one says, should Mike McCarthy take back the play calling duties for the rudderless pack offense?
Well, I think here's the reality. Tommy Clements is the offensive coordinator and the play caller right now. Tommy's a guy that was an All-American in Notre Dame and had a great career in the Canadian Football League and then went into coaching. And one of the reasons why I would be surprised a little bit if that happened, not that you want to lose a couple more, it might happen, but right now I'd be a little bit surprised if that happens because I know that Tom and Aaron Rodgers get along extremely well. They like each other very much. They're on the same page. If Rodgers went into McCarthy and said, hey, you know, Mike, I just don't like where we're going. Can you kind of jump in and help us a little bit? Then I could see it happen, or a couple more losses, I could see it happen. But right now I would be a little bit surprised if that did happen in the next week or so. I think that they just got to right themselves. They got to get a win, and they got to start, you know, playing a little bit better on defense and find a way to – and Rodgers, like I say, Rodgers has hit kind of a little dry patch, in his accuracy. He missed some balls in that game that normally he doesn't miss.
Jeff, you remember when I went around training camps this summer and I talked about the incredible depth that there is in the NFL and how players, we really are looking at the best of the best. I remember telling you that I would watch somebody make an incredible one-handed catch in training camp and then you look down and it's the third or fourth string wide receiver. I watched this game on Sunday night and watched a lot of this game at Lambeau Field. And when Aaron Rodgers threw the two-point conversion pass in the end zone to Devontae Adams, the ball's right there. It should have been caught, and it could have been caught. But an incredible defensive play from reserve defensive back Cresden Butler. And my first thought was, who the heck is Cresden Butler? He was making an outstanding play. And this is what these guys in the NFL do. From number 1 to 53 on a roster, they can wow you with the most spectacular performances.
There are no bad players in pro football. you know, you got to think about this now. There's only so many jobs, right, in that business. And there's, you know, 32 NFL teams and there's 9 Canadian teams. And so there's less than 50 teams in the world, right, in the world, right? How many, if you just go Bundesliga,
and the premiership, how many teams have you got, right? So what I'm saying to you is this. There's so few jobs, and there's so many people that want them, that to get one, you have to be special. I mean, you have to be. That's just the way it is. So when you see guys flash like that, it's not surprising, and you're exactly right. You go to camp, and you just look at some of those guys, and you go, who are they going to cut? How are they going to get down to 53? But usually a guy like that is a young kid who surprises you, is a young kid who maybe had come from a small school or a Malcolm Butler kind of story, or it's a guy that has really, really special talents in one area but maybe deficient in another, isn't a good tackler or whatever, so he's not like a household name. And then, you know, frankly, Neil, there's a lot of guys playing in the National Football League that people never hear about that are phenomenal players just because, you know, they're playing in a, you know, on a bad team or playing in a, you know, small market franchise or whatever, you know. So I have tremendous respect for everybody that snaps on a chin strap and plays on Sunday afternoon.
Absolutely. I just want to look at one other game, Jeff, and then get anything else that caught your eye in Week 10 before we move on and make our picks for Week 11. But Dallas dropped a seventh game in a row without Tony Romo. So we've talked about this a lot. They had to try and scrap out three or four wins. While Romo was away with this broken collarbone, they didn't do it. They lost all seven games. Looks like Romo's going to return this week against the Miami Dolphins. They lose 10-6 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Again, dramatic fashion. Jameis Winston diving for the end zone, fumbles, and the Cowboys recover the ball at the half-yard line. But there's a holding penalty, defensive holding against Jeff Heath, who'd already had two interceptions in the second half. So the Bucs get one more shot, and Jameis Winston scores on a one-yard run. But then I thought Dez Bryant had a... Dallas got the look they wanted. Dez Bryant, one-on-one with Brad McDougald, inside the last 30 seconds. Dez thought there was pass interference, and he kind of gave up on the play, Jeff. And McDougald came up with the interception, and it was game over. I mean, Dez had five catches for 45 yards. I mean, we talk about the quarterbacks all the time in Dallas in the absence of Tony Romo, but some of those other guys have got to step up as well and make plays. Be the leader of the team. If it's not the quarterback, put it on you. Go after that ball. I don't think Dez did that.
No, I agree with you. I think he was more concerned after he felt that DB bumped him about getting the interference call than he was about going up and competing for the football. He quit on the play, competing for the ball, to you know, look at the official. And actually, while the play was going on, once he got bumped, he started looking to the official for a flag, instead of, you know, competing through the ball, because there's going to be contact on every ball, particularly those 50-50 balls in the end zone. So you put it in the hands of your best players, and they have to deliver. And, you know, when you look at the Cowboys, when Romo went down, the thing that I thought would happen was, okay, here we go. We're going to see that offensive line, which is the best in football, dominate, and they're just going to run the ball and win, you know, win games 13-10, 10-7, those kinds of football games until they get back and get their guys healthy again. But they get Dez back healthy. He catches five balls for 45 yards. That's not all his thing, right? But just I'm surprised that they haven't given their best chance to win is when they can run right now is when they can run the ball. And they're not running the ball the way they should be able to run the football with five of the best offensive linemen in the National Football League. And then defensively, you know, they're so up and down. They play great one week, and then they don't look very good the next week. They've had all the distractions with Dez, all the distractions with you know, the other guy. I'm not even going to use his name.
Yep.
He misses practice. He misses meetings and is late for practice this week again. And so, you know, I mean, you get what you get, and when you have those kinds of guys, and until Romo comes back, they're 2-7. I feel horrible for Jason because I think he's in trouble now. And you know, I listened to the owner on doing press conferences after the game, talking about things that, frankly, you know, those are football things. And apparently, that's just what you're going to get in Dallas.
And that Dez distraction you're talking about is what you get in a losing locker room, because Dez had a big blow up. It wasn't a short thing. It went on for several minutes this week. A tirade in the locker room, going after one reporter, then going after another reporter. And Jeff, this is interesting because I know you talk about it a lot from a coaching point of view. I can tell you from a media point of view, when you go into a losing locker room or you go into a locker room on a losing team, it's a very, very uncomfortable place from a media point of view. And I'm all for the open locker room policy of the NFL, but I wonder sometimes what you get benefit wise from opening up your locker room. And I'm surprised I'm even saying this as I'm hearing it come out of my mouth. But quarterback for a start is only available one day a week. Normally that's in a press conference setting, so you don't get access to every big name every day, regardless of what the NFL says about its media policy. That's not the reality of it. And I wonder if what Detroit did when they were over here in the UK is a better answer. They provided 5, 6, 7 players every day and took them into a certain area, and you could work your way around the room and interview those guys. I'm just saying it's very, very incendiary at the moment to have, because players feel that's their area. And I sometimes feel uncomfortable stepping into that area, particularly on a losing team.
Well, I think that's right, and you know what I'm talking about, Neil, that negative energy that exists in the locker room when you're losing. Mm. And particularly when you have, you know, guys that are volatile and guys that are, you know, just frankly put their own issues above the team. I've grown weary, frankly, of watching my friend Jason Garrett defending guys on his football team for being knuckleheads.
Did you see Jason's face because he suddenly comes into the locker room at the end of Dez's tirade, and he's kind of trying to get Dez out of there in the end, but he looked like he had this sort of face of resignation. It was like, oh, it's like, come on, Dez,
here we go again.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Here we go again. And, you know, I understand from a locker room standpoint, a media access standpoint, because I live in both worlds, right? I've got feet sure. on both islands. But the reality of it is, when I listen to interviews as a coach listens to interviews. I don't listen to interviews as a fan, per se. And so when I see the kind of interviews that go on in Dallas, I see guys that don't buy into the system. You don't hear those interviews in New England. You don't hear those interviews in programs where they have a culture of winning, where they have a culture of buying in, and everybody's on the same page. Mm. Where you get those kinds of interviews typically are in teams that are, you know, fractionalized, and teams that are, you know, not winning, or teams that are star system teams, you know, and you can win that way. You can win that way in the short term. I don't know if you can win that way in the long haul. And I'm talking about consistent winning. Mm. I turned to Minnesota, who's 7-2 right now.
Yep.
And ahead, they're leading their division. And listen to the interviews that come out of there. It's like you're talking to Mike Zimmer, right? It's not like it's, you know, it's all about me, right?
Yeah.
When's the last time those guys that we're talking about in Dallas have had anything to say other than offloading against somebody else, typically that's the media, right? But yeah, they don't talk about us and we and, you know, our team, and it's, you know, me, 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 me. And when you got enough me guys, that's what you get. And, you know, it's not, I say this all the time, it's not collecting football cards. You know, when you put a team together, it's not collecting football cards. You know, that's, it doesn't work that way. It's creating an environment, a culture, a belief system, and then you get enough talented football players that want to buy in and believe. The most talented guys, and this has been proven over and over and over and over again, and some guys still don't get it. The most talented teams don't always win. The teams that play together the most, that care about one another, that, you know, can stay out of penalties, can, you know, all that stuff, all the stuff that great teams do, that's who wins. That's who wins historically in pro football, and that's who wins consistently in pro football. And yes, you can have some teams that are so freaking talented that they can overcome all that stuff. but they don't do it in the long haul, and typically somewhere along the way they're going to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, and the gold standard there is starting Brian Stork and Cameron Fleming at tackle, and you wouldn't have football cards with those guys. So that sums up exactly the point you're trying to make. Jeff, before we move on to Week 11, anything else in Week 10 that caught your eye? Because, I mean, wow, it's such a week, because we haven't even talked about Ben Roethlisberger coming off the bench. 379 yards passing. That was an NFL record off the bench, replacing the injured Landry Jones. The Vikings winning their fifth one in a row. We've barely talked about the Panthers so much. The Bengals getting knocked off by the Texans. That's just what happens in the NFL. You know, this is crazy, crazy week. Anything else that you just want to wrap up Week 10?
I have a very close friend on the Bears staff, and, you know, we communicate all the time. And, you know, when they started the season, he was really concerned about their football team. And, you know, it's amazing how sometimes there's subtraction by addition. Mm. They take Jared Allen, who didn't fit in what they wanted on defense, and move him to Carolina. It was good for Jared Allen because it put him back in a system that he's much more comfortable with. It gave a young player a chance to play in Chicago. They've really worked hard to limit the amount of exposure that Cutler gets to throw in interceptions. And they're trying to create an environment like we're talking about, which Foxy's been able to have in Carolina and in Denver. And doggone it, if they don't go out and just play a tremendous football game in St. Louis and beat St. Louis. I mean, I think the Bears really are one of those teams that's trending on the up. Now, we'll see this week, but again, that I thought John Fox and his staff are doing a great job. Like you said, there were some games, you know, that you watch it in Kansas City. You know, we had about 4 weeks ago, we were ready to write Kansas City off. Yeah. Now you're looking at them saying, hey, that may be a wild card team. The Bills are now, they got Tyrod Taylor healthy. So, you know, it's still a lot of football to be played.
All right, Jeff, we've got about 10 minutes left on Inside the Huddle. We've been through quite a bit of stuff already. Let's look ahead to Week 11, and then I want to get two questions in the mailbag. So we'll rattle through some of these games and make our picks, see if we do any better than we did last week. Starting on Thursday Night Football, Tennessee at Jacksonville. I'm not going to like their all-gold uniforms. I can tell you that right now, but I'm going to pick the Jags.
I think the Jags, too. I think the Jags are starting to show signs that all of that work that Gus and they've done as an organization, and all the way from Mr. Khan on down, is starting to show some fruits. And I hope they get a chance. I hope they win. I don't like the uniforms either, but I hope they can win in this one.
All right. I think the Jags will be really exciting to watch in 2016 as well. Let's move on to Indianapolis at Atlanta. Matt Hasselbeck in for Andrew Luck then. I think Atlanta are sliding, Jeff. I think Atlanta are sliding. Oh, it's a tough one. I want to pick Indianapolis, but it's on the road in Atlanta. I don't know. I'm probably going to stick with Atlanta, but it's a tough one to call.
I'm going to take Atlanta because they need this game, and they need to stay close to Carolina because they got Carolina twice in the last month of the season, and that could decide that, you know, that division.
St. Louis at Baltimore. The Ravens have lost a lot of close games. Every game has been within one score this season. I'm going to pick Baltimore to win at home.
I'm taking Baltimore, too. We played against Case Keenum when he was a quarterback at Houston, and a great college quarterback. Skill set doesn't exactly translate to the pro game. I think he'll throw some interceptions, and Baltimore wins.
All right. Washington at Carolina. And, Jeff, the question in the mailbag in a second talks about the Redskins. So you don't have to talk about the Redskins too much in your pick. Washington at Carolina. I'm going to go for Carolina to move on and win again.
Yeah, I'm going to take Carolina. I think this is going to be a close game, though. I think this is going to be one that's going to go down to the fourth, but I'm going to take Carolina at home.
All right. I've got a question about the Redskins in just a second for you. Denver at Chicago. Brock Osweiler makes his debut at starting quarterback for the Broncos. I'm going to pick Denver to win on the road, although I do like what I'm seeing out of the Bears.
You know what? I'm going to take the Bears at home, and I'm going to take the Bears. I think this is an emotional game for John Fox. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got Denver coming back in here, a lot of players that he brought to Denver. His situation with Elway went sideways at the end. The Bears are on a little bit of a roll, and they found themselves. That Langford kid is really a special young talent, so I'm gonna take the Bears.
All right. Oakland at Detroit. Who you got there, Jeff?
Got my Raiders.
Yep, I'm going Raiders as well. I think they get back on track this week. New York Jets at Houston. So a big win for Houston on the road at Cincinnati. The Jets have lost three of their last four. Who do you like in this one?
You know what? The Jets have really regressed since the opening of the season, but I still think the Jets have a better football team than Houston does.
I agree. I'm going to go Jets to win that one. Dallas at Miami. So this could be the game where all Cowboys fans get their man back and they might think, well, we're not quite out of this NFC East race now. The Giants are only at 5-5. Cowboys are at 2-7. Does Tony Romo lead Dallas to victory on the road? If he's playing, I mean, it's not been 100% confirmed. I mean, I think he is.
You know what? I think Dan Campbell got his rally, his guys back. They bounced back last week. They got, they're at home. Dallas is just such a, such a drama queen, if you will. Yeah. And, I'm not big on drama queens. I'm big on football teams, so I'm going to take Miami.
All right, you're going to take Miami. I'm going to stick with that same theory I've had in recent weeks where I pick the team that's playing against the Dolphins. So if I get my pick right, I'm happy. And if I get my pick wrong, I'm happy the Dolphins won. So I'm going Dallas. Green Bay at Minnesota. So the Vikings players got back from the road and hanging in their lockers, Jeff, were Beat Green Bay t-shirts. So Mike Zimmer's put the t-shirts in the locker this week. Does it inspire the Vikings at home against the Packers? I think it does. I'm going to pick Minnesota.
I'm going to tell you something. I loved what he said to his football team after the game. They get their seventh win, and he got a bunch of young guys, right?
Yep.
And it's so easy to get the success flu when you're a young football player in pro football, right? Because everybody's telling you how great you are, and you've arrived, and start popping the champagne corks and all that stuff. Zim said, hey, and he was very, very adamant. He said, hey, I'm going to drive you more now. I'm going to push you harder now.
Mm.
Right? I love that. I think that's the way you got to coach this young football team. And for the Packers, this is a big, big, big football game. They got to bounce back. And I'm going to say Aaron Rodgers finds a way to bounce back.
All right. You're going Green Bay in that one. Should be a good one. We got that on Sky Sports on Sunday. Tampa Bay at Philadelphia. So Mark Sanchez is in at quarterback. Philadelphia, well, they had the Dolphins. They let them off the hook. Dolphins fought back. Tampa Bay, I still think they'll be pleased with their season so far, but I'm going to take Philadelphia at home here.
Well, after the game in Tampa, I heard Lovie Smith in an emotional moment say, we're a good football team. I'm not buying Lovie. I'm going to say you can be a good football team. They got some growing to do yet. I think Philadelphia's defense will turn the ball over enough times that their offense will score 27, 28 points and win.
All right. Just as I picked the Philadelphia Eagles, Jeff, I looked up here at the NFL UK office. Through the glass window of the office I'm sitting in, I saw Mark Sanchez throw an interception in the end zone against the Dolphins. That almost made me change my pick, but I'm going to stick with the Eagles. The 49ers at Seattle. Seattle, I think, too much for the 49ers, especially at home.
Yeah, at home after that disappointing loss last week, and this will be, I think, has a chance to get ugly.
All right, both going Seattle there. Kansas City at San Diego. I like what I'm seeing out of the Chiefs. I like Charcandrick West, this young running back. Defense is hungry again. San Diego, to me, are a one-man team. That one man is very good, Philip Rivers, but he doesn't beat the Chiefs on his own.
Agreed. I am going to take the Chiefs right here.
All right. Sunday night football is Cincinnati at Arizona. I picked Seattle last week, and I underestimated the swagger and confidence of Bruce Arians' coach teams. They went into Seattle. They won 39-32. They were leading for a lot of the game, and then they fell behind, and all they did was come back and two long touchdown drives to get themselves back in control. So at home against Cincinnati, I'm going Arizona.
You know what? I think this is the best game of the week right here. I mean, this is the one I want to see.
Yeah.
And, I love Bruce Arians' coach teams. And you look at that Bengals roster and you say 1 through 53, there's very few, there are no holes in that roster. So I'm going to take Arizona at home, but I think this is going to be a game to really enjoy.
Talking about games to really enjoy, Monday Night Football to wrap up Week 11, Buffalo at New England. So Rex's boys aren't talking quite as much as they did when these two teams met in Week 2, when Rex was trying to ratchet up a playoff atmosphere. But you know that Buffalo are going to be up for this one, and they're going to feel like they can get that pass rush after Tom Brady.
Yeah, I'm sure that's one of the things that, and you know, that's one of the recipes for success against rush four against him. Mm. You know, and be sound in your zone and let your, you know, bang on the receivers and don't let them off the line of scrimmage and let the pass rushers rush. But I think it's such a tall order to say you're going to go into New England. And if this game was in Buffalo, I'd say Buffalo. But in New England, I'm going to say New England in a close game.
All right. I think Brady's won about 50 of his last 54 home games. But for the first time this season, I'm going to pick against the New England Patriots. I'm going Buffalo to win that one. So a couple of quick questions, Jeff, in the mailbag. Andrew Beatty says, big improvements at the Washington Redskins, surely worth a mention. Kirk Cousins had a great day last week. This is an improved team, isn't it? It's a team worth watching in the next couple of years, I think.
How did you like the post-game interview? And I think it was a defensive lineman. I don't even know who the guy was. But you remember Cousins' outburst a couple of weeks ago? How you like that? How you like that?
Oh, yeah.
How you like that?
Yeah.
The defensive lineman. Cousins is getting interviewed, and the defensive lineman walks right in the middle of the interview and starts screaming, "How you like that? How you like that? How you?" That, you know what? That shows me something. That's the team that likes each other, right? Mm. And I think that that's a positive. And I think Jay Gruden's done a good job in really tough situation in Washington. So you know, I was encouraged. I think the Redskin fans, you know, I wouldn't be optimistic about winning the division yet, but, you know, I think that football team is starting to show, you know, what Jay wants it to be.
Mm. And one last question, Jeff, and I'm going to enjoy this one as you're in a coffee shop surrounded by people and total strangers. This one comes from Gary Pugh, who says, I've been an avid fan for a few years now, guys, but I'm still struggling with when an offense does a hard count and why a hard count. So, Jeff, talk us through the hard count and when an offense would use it.
Well, typically, hard count is a non-rhythmic cadence. So, and I'll just give you a generic cadence. Quarterback will come over the center. There'll be a color and a number. He'll repeat to both sides of the line of scrimmage. Now, that may be an audible or it may be a dummy call. Blue, 28. Blue, 28. Say it, hit. And that would be a play on one. Now, if you go on two, it's blue, 28. Blue, 28. Say it, hit, hit. All right, now, a non-rhythmic cadence or a hard count is you call it on two, and it's blue 28, blue 28. Said, and it's inflection, a different inflection in the quarterback's tone, which if a defensive lineman isn't concentrating or a blitzer's not concentrating, they can show the blitz or they can jump off sides. And when Aaron Rodgers does it better than anybody else, he uses hard count in situations where he anticipates pass rush or a blitz to try and trigger them offside, because according the way the rules work, if there's a flag on the defense and the play doesn't stop, the offense has a play at no risk. Mm. So Rodgers can throw it in the end zone. If it's intercepted, it doesn't matter. It comes back because it was a defensive penalty. So it's a way of an offense to get first a free play in the case that we just talked about with Aaron Rodgers. But more importantly and more typically, it's to get the defense to show its hand or jump offside. So, you know, in situations where you are anticipating blitzes, you either use a hard count or you hold the count where you get up and go blue 28, blue 28, set, and then let time go before you use the hit, because the defense will start to creep up and the offensive lineman get the advantage and know where the pressure is coming from.
That is the best description of a hard count without making somebody sitting next to you spill their coffee. Good stuff, Jeff.
I did. The lady just jumped offside.
Did she?
So I got a free play here, so I'm...
Throw a flag in her face. Jeff, tell us, give us some update on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You had a big win in the playoffs last week, right? And now what's next for the Tiger Cats?
Well, we played the Eastern semifinal against Toronto, which is... these two teams have played each other more than any teams in professional football.
Wow.
And it's a bitter, bitter rivalry. They're 40 minutes away from us. It was at our place, a 17th straight sellout game, and we got behind, got down 18-6, fought our way back, and with time expiring on the clock, our kicker, Justin Medlock, hit a 47-yard field goal to win it and propel us into the Eastern Final. Now, the Eastern Final is the divisional final in our league. You win this one and you go to the Grey Cup, which is the Super Bowl of Canadian football.
Wow.
So we've got 60 minutes to play on the road in Ottawa against a great opponent that's beaten us twice this year. So got our work cut out for us. But, you know, it's it's all the cliches you've ever heard now. You know, all the 18 games don't matter. The only thing that matters in the playoffs is we're 1-0, and we get to play another week. And so if we can get to 2-0, we get to play for a championship.
Absolutely. Well, good luck, Jeff. And remember, it's one play at a time. It's a game of two halves. This is why you lift all them weights. All that stuff.
Hey, keep them coming. I'm writing them as you speak because I'm going to use them this week.
There's no I in team, but there's one in Neil. That says a lot, doesn't it? Jeff, good stuff this week. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We thank you all for listening. Jeff, you've been fantastic insight again. Take us away. Say goodbye to the good folks.
Well, I want to say thank you to all of the people in Ticats Nation UK, Ticats Nation Scotland, Ticats Nation Ireland. We got a great listenership and viewership. The game is streamed live around the world by the league this week. So catch us. And from the coffee shop on Lock Street in Hamilton, Ontario, it's Aloha.